Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM. It all happens here.
Now, we're joined for the Culture Club today by the author of Orchid and the Wasp, and also The Wild Laughter, and now her new novel, The Alternatives. Joining us from New York, Keelan Hughes, thank you very much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks so much for having me, Matt.
Actually, before I ask you about The Alternatives, what has you in New York?
I am here. I've been here since September for a 9-month fellowship at the New York Public Library. It's called the Cullman Center. And every year there's 15 fellows who come in. It's mostly nonfiction writers, but there's a few novelists as well and the odd poet. And we come and work, have an office in the library and work from there every day. So it's a totally amazing gig. And I'm very sorry that it's going to end in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah. Does this mean you get a new novel written in the time you're there?
That would be, I'm afraid I'm not one of those people who can write a novel in 9 months, but you are meant to be working on a book while you're there, yeah, and trying to use the library as much as possible. And the main thing is to go in there every day, because I suppose they like the idea that the fellows are sharing ideas and creating a kind of community. And I have to say, after the years of COVID, it has been, I feel kind of chemically changed from this revelatory experience of seeing colleagues every day. You're kind of stepping away from your laptop and phone and having lunch for 40 minutes, or, you know, it's been amazing.
And also having access to so many books as well. What sort of things are you pulling out to read?
Oh my goodness, it's incredible. Obviously, there's the library. The New York Public Library isn't kind of a borrowing library. That's across the street, in the Stavros Niarchos Foundation Library. That's where you often hear people coming into the Bryant Park Library, kind of saying, "Where are all the books?" There is a reference room, the Rose Main Reading Room, but. But yeah, it's where a lot of the archives are held. It's just, so you're often going into special collections or going into specific rooms in the library to read. You know, say there's someone writing a biography of Emily Bronte, and she'd be able to get all sorts of manuscripts and archival material. This, essentially every single rabbit hole in the universe.
Better than the internet.
Oh yes, oh yeah, and there's something, you know, really romantic about. I remember in the autumn, I was about to say the fall. I'm almost fully American now. in the autumn, I was going down a rabbit hole for a short story I was writing about a historian who's working on the papyri, the ancient scrolls in Herculaneum, the town near Pompeii that was buried as well, Anyway, I was going down this rabbit hole, and I was trying to find any kind of diaries of archaeologists who would have been there in the original kind of discovery of Herculaneum, and I couldn't find anything. But I did find just a diary of an American guy who went on a great tour, you know, with the grand tour that a lot of wealthy Americans did, and in his diary. You know, there were just extraordinary moments where he'd been hankering after this particular woman called Alice, and then all of a sudden, you know, he gets into conversation with Alice, and he's just absolutely buzzing. And then about 15 pages are torn out of the library or out of the diary, and the next entry is "unhappiest day of my life." Just one line, and you know, so kind of, I remember sitting there just thinking, nobody has called this book out. It came from a box, you know, ordered, you know, several days in advance, and nobody had taken out this, you know, late 19th century diary for a very long time. And there's something just incredibly special about that.
So you can fill in the gaps now and make a story out of it, can you?
Well, I don't know. It's more than anything, I just felt kind of like a sense of being a human being and belonging to a larger story. In a, you know,
yeah.
In that moment, to me, it felt kind of, I don't know, very restorative and profound.
And listen, before we get to all your choices for the Culture Club, tell us about The Alternatives and the four sisters who are at the heart of it.
Yeah, thank you. So, it's my third novel, and it follows four Irish sisters whose adulthood kind of came early when their parents died in tragic circumstances. But the novel is set when they're all in their 30s. And the eldest sister, Alwyn Flattery, is a geologist who's been witnessing the collapse of deep time, where processes that should play out over millennia are playing out over decades. And then her youngest sister, Nell, is a philosopher who's been adjuncting at various Connecticut universities for nearly 20 years and battling an illness she can't afford to have diagnosed. And then Maeve is a minor celebrity chef who lives on a houseboat in London. And she's carved out a really unusual career for herself, navigating the food shortage crisis. But she finds herself catering to kind of food nationalists and elites. And then the last sister, Rona, is a celebrated political scientist and single mum who's fighting for direct democracy. And in the background, she's been paying these untold sums to have seawall defences built to protect her shoreside mansion in Dublin from storm surges. So they've all been living, they all have these, they all have PhDs, except Maeve, the chef, her PhD is honorary. And they've been living kind of distanced lives until in the opening chapter, so it's not a spoiler, Alwyn, the geologist, suddenly vanishes from her job and home, and it's her disappearance that brings the sisters together for the first time in years.
And back to Ireland.
Back to Ireland, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
The way you describe it, it sounds like you still have fond memories of having good fun writing it.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I think, you know, some of the sisters are quite funny, and it's always such a joy because you never know when you start a novel what kind of characters you're going to have to spend the next several years with. So I was really grateful, you know, especially during COVID years, to be in company that felt like people I would want to spend time with. It's a very perverse thing to be a novelist where you're, you know, to someone else, it might sound like you're just spending time with yourself, but that's not what it feels like when you're writing characters.
Okay, so let's get to your Culture Club choices. And before we get back to books, let's talk about music. And we ask everyone, what can they remember as the first piece of music they ever bought? What can you remember?
So I don't remember a specific single, but I do know that early among them would have been Destiny's Child, Survivor, and which I think I actually saw them in concert as well, before Beyonce was Beyonce, you know. And then Spice Girls' Wannabe was definitely one of the first ones, I have to admit.
Nothing wrong with that. Quite a few people have said that the Spice Girls was their first choice, but what we do have, well, yes, we haven't heard it for a while, is a little bit of Survivor by Destiny's Child. Still sound as good to you? It must be nearly two decades on now at this stage.
I know, it doesn't feel dated though.
It doesn't, it sounds great. We asked you for favourite album and favourite band, and what you did instead of giving us a favourite band, and that's fair enough, you've given us a whole range of albums because you clearly love your music.
I do, yeah. Sorry about that. I just I would keep me up for the rest of all the nights of my life if I had to boil it down to one.
Well, give us some of them anyway, and we have a few tracks that we're going to play. Actually, tell us about Niels Frahm, the 2013 album Spaces, because I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, Niels Frahm, I think he would definitely be in my top 10 of, you know, musicians that I've listened to in my life. He's a German guy, and he combines contemporary classical with electronic music. So he's mostly working with pianos, actually many pianos, which he plays at the same time, and a drum machine and a synthesizer, I think. And the album Spaces is the one that I listen to most often, but really everything. And it's that there's a series of live recordings from various spaces over the course of 2 years. There's a track that I recommend anyone to listen to called Toilet Brushes. I would have it on repeat in my coffin. So that you can watch that on YouTube. There's a live performance from St. John at Hackney Church. And it's just the tone and temper of it. It's somehow urgent, but it's not stressful. It's really life-affirming and kind of joyous and devastating. I think he's a genius.
That's not the track we have. The one we do have is Says. Is that a good representation of his music?
Yeah, that's a very chill moment. It's also quite progressive and it builds. So it's really something to spend time with.
Okay, you've got me interested in that. I'm going to have a go at that. Tell us about your liking, though, as well, for Fred Again's Boiler Room London DJ set.
So this has over 34 million views on YouTube. So I'll put me down for at least 100 of those, and possibly several hundred. Yeah, it's from 2022, and it's just an hour and 10 minutes. And I think there's so much post-COVID joy in that you can see. It's really great to watch. Fred Again is a UK producer and DJ and kind of a superstar in the electronic music space. There's tracks on that set from his own albums, and then there's also unreleased tunes, so you can see these tunes being played for the first time for an audience. And so it's a hybrid of a live and a DJ setup. He does kind of some finger drumming, and the genres are, I guess, UK garage, drum and bass, dubstep, tech, and then electronic music and pop. So it's a mixture of those. And so it's really, I like to listen to a lot of music without lyrics, because I can't multitask. So if there's lyrics, I have to stop what I'm doing and just listen to the music. So I tend to listen to this kind of thing quite a lot.
Let's hear a bit of Fred Again. So give us some more, Keelan, of your album and band choices.
Okay, I'll run through a few of the others, because it's quite an eclectic mix. I like lots of different types of music. So Jamie XX is another British electronic music producer. So a lot of people will know the track Gosh. And that's another one that the music video is really worth watching. It's from 2015. It was shot in Zhejiang, I think. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, in China. And there's a cast of 400 people, and it's just incredible. But it's maybe in a similar vein to that, a little bit more chill. And then a totally different band group that I love are The Gloaming. I think they sound like nobody else. And I love that it's in Irish. I think I was mentioning earlier that I tend to not listen to music with too many lyrics because I can't. Well, I love that, but I can't do anything else at the same time. So I benefit from my Irish being kind of crap, and I can only pick up the odd lyric here and there. And Martin Hayes makes a violin, I think, sound like a totally unique and different.
And he's actually done a culture club here like yourself with us.
Oh, wow, wow. I mean, yeah, well, it's so atmospheric. It's so moving. And it's fresh while it's honouring a tradition, I think. And so I tend to love kind of fusion music, and they are blending kind of trad, Celtic, world music, contemporary, classical, jazz, chamber music. You know, there's a kind of restraint in the music that I love, and also a progressive layering. So that kind of creates a sense of yearning that I really love.
Give us a few more, because we will have to move on to other things. But you've got the likes of Gorillaz, Demon Days, which is a great album.
It is a great album. And I put in the Fugees, The Score, because it was so kind of iconic growing up. Bon Iver, Forever Ago. He's an American indie folk band headed up by the singer-songwriter Justin Vernon. And I don't tend to listen to that much kind of in what you classify as indie rock or indie folk, but I think it's brilliant, and I think the lyrics are incredible. The lyrics of Skinny Love, the song Skinny Love is kind of a poem. And then the last couple of albums I had mentioned to you was Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah, which the album of the same name from 2005. And just right from the opening note, the tone is established, and it just changes my mood. You've got this kind of crazy, drunken circus master voice, almost kind of homilying, kind of farcically homilying and sing shouting with kind of maracas and triangle in the background. I just find it really intoxicating and playful and celebratory. So it's music that makes me happy. And then the last one I had mentioned was very much kind of background music for me, but in a very helpful way. The Tron Legacy soundtrack, a film I've never seen, but the soundtrack is by Daft Punk. And it was a recommendation from a podcast I listened to, Kermode and Mayo's Take, a film review podcast. And Mark Kermode tends to talk about the soundtracks of films quite a lot. I love to not feel manhandled by a film soundtrack, but for my mood to be changed. And this one does that.
Okay, there's some great choices. But briefly, I want to get, best gig you were ever at is something completely different.
Yeah, I saw. I through some American guy, I managed to get a VIP pass to the Red Hot Chili Peppers at Slane Castle. I don't know. I was a teenager. I was maybe 16, so 17. So however many years, I'm 38 now. However many years ago that
is. It was 2003. They played Slane.
Wow, look at you with that knowledge off the top of your hat. I was on the side of the stage as they were playing, so that was pretty memorable.
We actually have a clip from, by the way, from the Red Hot Chili Peppers at Slane. Red Hot Chili Peppers from Slane, the best gig choice of Caitlin Hughes, who is our Culture Club guest, and we'll be back with more from her after this short break. Welcome back. Caitlin Hughes, the author of The Alternatives, great new novel, is with us today for our Culture Club. And we've had your musical choices, so let's move on to movies. And I suspect you love your movies every bit as much as you love your music by the look of this list.
Sorry about that.
No, it's nothing to apologise for at all. You do love your movies, though, don't you?
I do, yeah, I do. I think it's a higher art form than we give it credit for sometimes.
What in particular stands out for you?
Okay, well, a movie that I saw just a couple of years ago that I keep recommending to everyone is a documentary by Michael Dweck and Gregory Kershaw. It's called The Truffle Hunters. And it's about some elderly men in Italy and their dogs who are looking for really rare, expensive Alba truffles in the forests of Piedmont in Italy. And it's really a movie about life and passion and how you spend your time and what costs your passions come to your relationships. It's incredible.
You also have Alice in Wonderland, the original. Is that one of the cartoon version, is it?
Yeah, the Disney animation from 1951. It formed such a lifelong impression on me that I felt I had to include it in my favourite films.
And one of the great Irish movies of all time, Intermission.
Yes, a comedy crime directed by John Crowley, whose work I generally love, and the screenplay is by Marco Rowe. It has a young Cillian Murphy and Colin Farrell and Kelly MacDonald, and it's kind of a regretted breakup and revenge plot scenario. It's very, very funny.
What other movies do you have on your list?
I have Parasite, which I'm sure most of your listeners will have seen, the thriller, again, comedic drama about greed and class discrimination in contemporary South Korea. Sorry for the sirens in the background here.
Yes, you warned me earlier that would happen.
And I love that that filmmaker Bong Joon-ho. He made an amazing film also called Okja. And then I had the older film Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind, romantic sci-fi, and I think it's just a very iconic film about having painful memories erased from your mind, and with Jim Carrey and Kate Winslet. I love that film.
You also seem to have a liking for Daniel Day-Lewis because you have both The Master and There Will Be Blood there.
Exactly, and that's not just Daniel. Paul Thomas Anderson directed, I think, both of those. Let me see. Yeah, both of those films. So The Master, Joaquin Phoenix, and Philip Seymour Hoffman, about the founder of Scientology and someone he takes on as his mentee. I have to say, Paul Thomas Anderson, I love a lot of his films, Licorice Pizza, Phantom Thread, Punch Drunk Love, There Will Be Blood. So yeah, and There Will Be Blood is this Western about an oil prospector and his son feuding with a local preacher. It's adapted from a novel, and it's extraordinary. The performance is just off the charts.
We do, though, have a clip from a movie that Brad Pitt was in, Terrence Malick's Tree of Life. Why have you picked that?
Tree of Life, I picked because even though, it's kind of a love it or hate it film, I really love philosophical films. It could be classified as sci-fi, but it's really about, family dynamics and the influence of your parents. And it's about masculinity and trying to make sense of your childhood and what it is to belong to this weird species. It's just extraordinary atmosphere, and I like that a film can reach a wide audience that is contemplative.
Let's hear a clip from it with Brad Pitt.
Toscanini once recorded a piece 65 times. You know what he said when he finished? It could be better. Think about it. 27 patents your father has. It means ownership. Ownership of ideas. You gotta sew them up. Get them by
we'll
the
get
nuts.
Pardon my French.
Be rich. You make yourself what you are.
have control of your own destiny. Can't say I can't. You see, I'm having trouble. I'm not done yet. Can't say I can't.
Brad Pitt in Terrence Malick's Tree of Life. What about books? You actually surprised me, because given that you gave us lengthy lists of music and movies, you plumped quickly for a favourite author and a book.
Yeah, well, I think in that case, if I was to give a list, the list would have been even three times as long. And we didn't get through all the films there, but I chose Anton Chekhov. And if it has to be a specific book, then his collection of stories, The Lady with the Dog and Other Stories. I only knew Chekhov's plays until I started teaching writing. I wasn't really familiar with short stories. I just don't think I ever knew about them as a form or noticed them. I probably had read them, but I didn't notice, you know, the form itself until I started teaching. And then I discovered, yeah, that not only is he an extraordinary playwright, he has this huge body of work in these exquisite, humane, often heartbreaking stories. And he's just an absolute master.
Now, I'm conscious of the clock, so you again gave us a great list of TV shows. As a child, what particularly were you into?
I had to kind of fess up. You know, I watched a lot of The Simpsons, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Kenan and Kel. I think I do tend to like comedy. And so that carried through to my teenagehood as well, when Father Ted would have been, you know, a go-to. Will and Grace also. And then a bit more seriously, The Sopranos, I was watching as a teenager.
Very good choice. And then from your more recent selections.
Yeah, so the recent selections are, the list I gave you was Better Call Saul, Catastrophe, written by Sharon Horgan and Rob Delaney, Station 11, which is based on the novel by Emily St. John Mandel, Succession, Rick and Morty, an animated TV show, and Atlanta. And I said that if I had to boil down that list to two, it would probably be Better Call Saul and Atlanta.
Okay, Better Call Saul, I think, is one of the greatest TV shows ever made. I have to admit, I haven't seen Atlanta, and though some people have recommended it to me. Just remind us of what it's about before we play a clip.
It is these very short episodes, and it's set in Atlanta, and it is incredibly insightful, and I wouldn't say acerbic, it seems a little mean. Very, very smart, often a little surreal. It is Daniel Glover is one of the writers on it. I think there's a number of other writers, but there's kind of three central friends played by Daniel Glover, Brian Tyree Henry, and Lakeith Stanfield. And then there's an ex-girlfriend who's part of the friendship group as well. And I've never seen such a portrait of a contemporary America that is both brutal in its vision, but also honest and searching and ambitious. Every single episode just lifts the ceiling. I just think it's really a masterclass in TV writing, but also the acting and the world building. There's just nothing like it.
Okay, so from the first season of Atlanta, written by and starring Donald Glover, from the seventh episode, which was shot as if it was a TV talk show on the fictional Black American network.
Harrison looks from the outside to be your average teenager. He goes to school, plays video games, even listens to music in his room. But there's one difference.
I'm a 35-year-old white man.
Harrison, born Antoine Smalls, has transracial identity, identifying as Harrison Booth, a 35-year-old white man from Colorado.
And when did you know that you were a 35-year-old white man?
Well, I've always felt different. I go to the store, the movies, and just be thinking to myself, like, why am I not getting the respect I deserve? Mm-hmm. And then it just hit me. I'm white and 35.
I just miss Colorado sometimes. You know, here I pretend the buildings are the old San Juan mountain range, but, you know, the job's just here.
And where do you work?
I'm a systems engineer for Coca-Cola.
Oh, okay. That boy don't work. He go to school and that's it. Mm-hmm. One day he said, call me Harrison. I said, who's that? He said me.
Do you believe that he is a white man?
I mean, he isn't.
Okay, is that a good indication of the show?
Yeah, that, I get that episode is a little like borderline Black Mirror. But yeah, so that's the thing. The episodes are quite different to one another. But yes, it is. It's funny as well. I'd forgotten how funny. I think if you love Better Call Saul, you're going to love Atlanta.
Okay, I'm definitely going to give it a shot now on your recommendation, Keelan. Podcast, what have you gone for?
I have gone for Kermode and Mayo's Take. So Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo I have a film review podcast that I think it's probably in the top five most listened to podcasts of all time. So I'm not going to be introducing something brand new to most of your listeners. But they had this podcast on the BBC running for many decades. For some unknown reason to me, it got discontinued at the BBC. So now it's called Kermode and Mayo's Take. And I'm sure they've carried over all their listeners. And it's partly the quality of the film reviewing, but it's also the friendship between Kermode and Mayo. They call it wittertainment. They kind of witter away. And I listen to it every single night. I'm an insomniac, so I tend to have to listen to something all night long. And I'm a Vanguardista, a paying subscriber. So thankfully they put out several hours worth of material every week. But if you're not a paying subscriber, I think it's an hour. The film reviews are incredible.
Okay, very briefly, and I know you gave us a list of plays, but just give us in less than a minute why you love Hamlet in particular.
Hamlet was, I did at school. It was my Leaving Cert text, and even that didn't ruin it, which says a lot. I think, you know, there's enough in that play to sustain a desert island dweller for a lifetime. So, and my love of the play was then compounded in university when I did a theatre criticism course where we had to go and review it. And we got an email from the lecturer saying, bad news, bad reviews. And he made us go back and pay to see it again because we kind of misunderstood what the intention of the production was. And so that created another beat in my love of Hamlet.
Keelan Hughes, it has been terrific having you for the Culture Club. Thank you for going through all of your choices so enthusiastically, and as well, congratulations on the publication of your new novel, your third, The Alternatives. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM. It all happens here.